Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on a somewhat cold spring day. I look over to my right, and lo and behold, next to me, see Red Fred, is the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I mean, I don't know. Fine. Yeah, we're doing good. We're doing well.
I'm trying to stay positive. I was in a dark place last night, obviously. If you're listening to this podcast, you are aware the beloved Bulls season is over. A shockingly bad, awe-inspiring, horrible loss to the Miami Heat in Miami, with a team without Jimmy Butler. Debatable whether or not he's their best player. I'd have to argue Bam is, but that said, to lose like that, to get their ass kicked in every conceivable way, beyond disappointing. And so the season's over, and let's talk about potential changes. Let's talk about how you feel. Give me your initial thoughts, DT.
Of the season as a whole?
Well, first of all, the game. When we talk about the game and go into the season as a whole.
I got to be honest. When they dropped by 20, I just turned it off. I was like, F this. They got it to 10 at halftime.
So Q3?
In the first quarter, yeah. They were down by 20. It was like 42 to 22.
Oh, you turned it off in the first quarter?
Maybe 5 minutes into the second quarter. So I'm like, I can't watch it. I just can't. I can't watch us get killed by like non-Butler, non-Rozier Heat. And I saw that they brought it back to 10. I flipped it on for a little bit at halftime. I'm like, all right, maybe they're going to come back. And then they just like dropped their open. I'm like, no, I'm done. I'm just done. I just don't want to see this. I don't. So I'm maybe not as emotional about that game as you, because I was just done. I'm like, I can't watch us lose by 30 in this game to the Heat without Jimmy Butler.
Well, the backcourt that I promoted as the best NBA backcourt 24 and under in Io and Kobe White, promoted that on the ESPN 1000 airwaves, Waddle and Sylvie this week, really didn't come to play. Kobe was 13 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 of 16, 2 of 8 from 3. And Io, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 of 15 overall, 2 of 11 from 3. I mean, they just were awful.
Yeah.
On both ends of the court. Really disappointing. Put in a lot of minutes this year, but they finished with a whimper. I thought DeRozan was phenomenal. 22 points, 8 of 16, 3 of 6 from 3. 3 of 4 from the free throw line. Played 40 minutes. I was really proud of his effort. I thought he played well. Vooch actually played, you know, his typical game, 7 of 17, inefficient, 16 points, 14 rebounds, gets his, and 5 assists, gets his double-double, and everybody acts like he's good. He was absolutely atrocious on the defensive end, complete embarrassment. Changes need to be made there. Caruso had a rough game, played hurt. Everyone else was awful, especially Dalen Terry, you know, some of these other guys that came off the bench. I guess Javonte Green had a decent game, 5 of 6 from the field. You know, that said, they were never really in the game. I felt like there was never one point in that game where I felt like the Bulls are going to win this game. I did feel at halftime they have at 10 after getting thoroughly beaten and thoroughly dominated. I was shocked that it was that close, but the third quarter was a disaster, and they just looked so slow, so unathletic, especially on the interior. Like, we cannot go into another season and just be like, all right, this is fine. We're going to go with a front court that can't defend the rim, that can't get out on three-pointers, zero versatility on the defensive end. What say you?
Now if we're going to just go to the macro. I mean, like I said, I watched maybe about two-thirds of the game. So the two-thirds I watched, I agree with the stuff you've said. And, you know, but it's just like, this is this team, right? Up and down the whole season. This is this team. You know, they're just, they can be good 1 minute and they're lousy the next minute. And, you know, that's kind of the modern NBA a little bit. You see more blowouts, you see whatever. When you get into these one and done scenarios, like, yeah, it's just coin flips, you know, it feels like. I mean, it really is. Like, on a different day, maybe we beat the Heat. But that's the problem with being the ninth seed, is you got to win 2 games. And, you know, like, I don't think either of us thought they were going to do anything against Boston. I mean, I mean, you predicted 2 wins against Boston. After they beat the Atlanta game, maybe you were just there, beat Atlanta in that game. Maybe you were just a little high on life in that moment when we were just crushing Atlanta.
Well, I think I talked about, we watched it together. Yeah. I think I talked about us all getting together for game 7 against Boston. So that I was pretty high on life at that
point. It was
point.
A high moment, right? It was. But that's the thing, right? Like, you can have both of those things exist in different, you know, it's like one game difference, right? Like, you know, in a different game, we could have had that game against Atlanta, against Miami, but like, we are not. You've seen now over like 3 years, we're not the team that has that good game 4 out of 7 games, right? Like, we're just not. So we're not really going to advance. We lack the shooting. I mean, you've hammered this home on Twitter. I think it was like 19 of the top 20 teams were in the top 20 in shooting for like playoffs. And, you know, 9 of the 10, you know, bottom teams were in the bottom 10 in shooting. Like, you know, it's like rare that one stat is going to be like that predictive of how things go. But, you know, it's a shooter's league. The Bulls don't really have great shooting. And they're lacking a lot of other things. They don't have the right things to make up for it. And they've let a lot of their assets get stale. It's going to be harder and harder to get out of this. You know, I've been saying that over our last few shows when you ask me like, well, Doug, what would you do? And, you know, normally I have a plan of like, you know, some super aggressive kind of crazy thing, you know, that like min maxes some weird stuff and you pay a super steep price 1 year, but you position yourself forward. And man, it's really going to be tough to find anything even like that now. It really just let so many of these assets depreciate that, you know, left on the team that has positive trade value is Alex Caruso, Kobe White, and Ayo Dosunmu. Like, there's not another single asset that has positive trade value on this team. You have to pay to get rid of Vooch or Zach, most likely. You know, DeMar is a free agent. Maybe you could get a trade exception and some teeny asset for him in a sign-in trade, you know, like a second rounder or something. You know, Pat Williams is probably going to be
trading him.
I mean, I don't think they're going to. I'm just saying if you wanted to. What we are going to do is, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the AK press conference. I was just like, kind of like reading over the tweets. I didn't get to see it live. So I'm just following Will Gottlieb, our buddy Will, to see, you know, he's got a bunch of AK's quotes. But, you know, like AK seems to be like, yeah, we're going to make changes this offseason. But, you know, like last season after the draft, I think his quote was like, well, you know, wait till you see what we do in free agency. And then, like, you know, whatever, you sign 2 bit players like Torrey Craig at the minimum and you know, 2/3 of the MLE and Javon Carter. That was your free agency. Like, and you let, you know, Javonte Green and Derek Jones Jr. go. And, you know, I'd say we would think you probably would have been better off with Green and Derek Jones Jr. all year than those two guys you brought in, right? Like, so, you know, like, it's hard to say if he's actually going to make changes, but he's held on to things so long that there's really not a lot you can do to make this better next year. Like, I really don't think you can make this better next year. You're gonna have to start thinking more long term, and it's gonna be painful. And you can maybe try to hold the 9th spot for another year by doing whatever moves, but you're not gonna move the ball forward towards ever getting out of the first round with those moves either. You're just gonna be getting older and, you know, letting your assets depreciate more. So it's a tough position the Bulls are in. I mean, I don't trust AK at all to get out of it. I mean, he's not made a player-for-player trade in 3 years. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just insane. Hard to see him doing anything.
How crazy is that? How crazy is that, Doug? I mean, so is there anyone in the league that's done that?
I've not looked robustly, but, man, that just feels like a super long time. You know, and I had, I don't know if you saw my tweet this morning. It seemed to pick up a good amount of steam on Twitter. And, you know, I'll read it to you now if you don't mind. And I just said, I don't know that I have much energy for Bulls takes, but here's one. Most commentary about the Bulls is behind the curve. You had a hot second to rebuild around Kobe and Ayo by moving your vets a year and a half ago, a move I advocated for strongly at the time because it was obvious where this thing was going. Now you'll return nothing for your big three. 0 first-round picks are coming back. Maybe 1 mid-round first for Caruso, given he can only give you 1 more playoff season. 0 picks are coming for Pat if you even move him. You'd have to pay to get Vooch and Zach off the roster. If you want to juice your team with assets, it's Kobe and Ayo that you now have to trade. Your only bright spots. The Bulls have no path for a quick rebound outside of pray for miracles. With every delay in every doubling down on this idiocy, they have tightened the noose around their own necks. The only thing you can hope for is that they fire AK and hire someone else. You know, that's kind of sums up my thoughts on this one. Is it's like you've really boxed yourself in. You know, like, I mean, you remember when I was talking about my plan? I think it was 2 off seasons ago, which was like trade DeMar and Vooch for like 2 unprotected firsts from the Lakers, and then flip Zach to another team for 2 firsts, and flip Caruso for 2 firsts. And you know, like, people weren't real thrilled with that plan, but like you'd love to have now Ayo and Kobe and like 6 first round draft picks, wouldn't you? Like, yeah. So it's going to be really tough to like do something similarly good. And it was not hard to project that we'd end up where we are.
I keep on going back to the fact that he took over a roster with Daniel Gafford on it, Wendell Carter Jr., Kobe White was on the roster.
Don't say it.
Lauri Markkanen was on the roster.
Don't say it.
You can almost – I'm not going to say it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
There was an NBA starter on the roster.
Another person later. With a torn ACL and a two-way contract.
Yes, exactly.
It turned out quite good.
But that said, Doug, I mean, I think you can make the argument literally that if you just would have kept all your draft picks and kept those guys, that you'd probably be in a better place right now.
Yeah, I've made that argument. I call it the pet rock. If you had a pet rock as your general manager, you would be better off. If they just rolled forward what you had and just drafted based on the ESPN top 100, you know, you'd have had Franz Wagner on the team. You'd still have had Ayo on the team. And you'd have, I don't know who they had where Jet Howard was drafted, whether it be Howard or someone else, but like, and then you'd have Lowry and Gafford and Wendell Carter and Kobe. Like, I mean, I'm not saying the team would win a title. It wouldn't, but like, you'd be pretty happy about a team full of guys under 25, you know, who are like that good, right? Like you'd probably be, you'd be one of these teams like a 46, 47, like win team like Orlando is today. And, you know, you'd have all young guys with some room to improve or like guys you could trade for other guys, like guys that would be desirable on the trade market. Like it would be a million times better. And it probably wouldn't have ended in a title, but like it would have been way more enjoyable than what we have today. And, you know, it's kind of a bummer that is what it is. You know, one of the things I think with Arturas Karnišovas is he's just not the right general manager for a team like the Bulls. And you kind of think he is maybe because it seems like he's aiming for just get to the first round and the Reinsdorfs want to always be at least, you know, first round. I think people like take that to be like, oh, they just want to get to the first round and they don't care. I think the reality is they want the first round to be the floor. Like they want to be better. Like they'd make so much money if they were better, right? Like people, like they clearly care about money. You would make a gazillion more dollars if you were a second round or Eastern Conference Finals team or Finals team. So they definitely want to be better. They're not going to go crazy with spending, but you need someone like Sam Presti. And if you look at Sam Presti, his history is to be very cost conscious and to make lots of very long-term moves where you get all this long-term value for the stuff you're doing and you give up short-term value for long-term. And he lets that cascade forward, basically compounding interest and, you know, built what is now the number one seed in the West. And, you know, the Bulls need a guy who's thinking like that. And Arturas Karnišovas, his MO is to overpay for people. He overpays in draft assets and he overpays in cash. And, you know, the Bulls, if they're going to be in this like non-luxury tacked kind of like asset restricted team, like they're going to be like a small market team, you can argue whether they should be or not. But if they are, you can't have someone whose MO is to overpay. Like that does not like align with the way the franchise wants to operate. You can't afford to overpay on everything. Instead, you have to like move guys early. You have to get long-term value. You have to build this compounding interest, so to speak, with your stuff. And you know, he's shown he's just not a fit guy for this type of team with these types of restrictions.
He's just the king of the team, of the player option too. It's like, I was looking up Javon Carter's contract. He's got a third year player option to pick up at $6.8 million. Like, what are the odds that isn't picked up? We're stuck with this guy for 3 years. You know, Vooch, there's never a team option. It's always the player option. And that third year for Vooch, I mean, he goes on and on with this guy's giving out. It's insane.
I don't mind Javon Carter so much. Like, it didn't work, but I didn't think it was crazy at the time. Like, Carter seemed like a guy who fit what we needed. Theoretically, he was a 3-and-D guy, added a lot of shooting. It didn't pan out. Like, it ended up being a bad signing. But I get why he did it, and I liked it at the time. And 3 years was probably just the price you pay. I feel like Javon Carter could have got that money somewhere else too. You know, it was still well under the mid-level exception. I think there would have been other suitors. You know, the things that concern me more is like the Vooch signing, where it's like no one was going to pay that money for him. Like, we just bid against ourselves. Like, those are the ones that bother me. Is it's like, there's no reason to do this. There's no reason to sign him for so many years as so much money and make promises about touches and changing the offense around him. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's just like completely nonsensical. 100%. So like, you know, sometimes you can have a contract that you sign and it doesn't work out. And I think Javon Carter is an example of that. But like, I don't think it was bad in theory, you know, and like the flip side of that is like Alex Caruso, you know, like Alex Caruso, when we got him, we paid considerably more than the Lakers were willing to pay. And the Lakers just won a title with him. You know, so we overpaid in cash to get him. And we probably had to convince him to come. Like, he wasn't going to come here versus the Lakers at the same price. You know, but he went back to the Lakers and be like, hey, can you match this? And they said no. So, you know, we paid maybe more for Alex Caruso than like the market value the Lakers set for him and what other teams set for him. You know, but then he became a great contract anyway because he just was so good. So, you know, sometimes you can overpay and it works out. Like, Kobe White's another guy where it feels like, maybe not Kobe White, Ayo Dosunmu. Like, Ayo Dosunmu would seem to have no market. All the free agency was gone and we paid him $21 million. We probably could have got him for like 15, like 315. But like, it doesn't matter because Ayo has been a stud. So like, who cares? Like, you don't care when you're right. You know, the problem is when you overpay and then you're wrong. And then not only are you wrong, but you're also wrong by like, you know, $4 million a year over market. So Javon, I don't think they were $4 million a year over market. Like Vooch, I think they were like $4 to $5 million a year over market and they were wrong. And, you know, so that's, yeah. And so that's the tough thing, like with someone like Vooch. Like Javon, I just think they ended up being wrong, but I think the contract was probably market value in the moment. But yeah, now it's a dead deal. Like, I don't think anyone would take Carter off your hands. So just another guy you're stuck with. And that's going to be tough for the Bulls. Between Lonzo, Zach, and Javon Carter, it's like you got like, what is it, like $70 million roughly wrapped up in guys who are, you know, maybe not guys you would want on your team right now.
I understand that Zach has had a disappointing season. I think the overkill and burying him and calling him a pariah and acting like he doesn't have talent is gone way overboard. It's ridiculous. Like, I do feel like Zach LaVine will probably get rid of him for nothing or maybe even have to attach an asset to get rid of him. But I absolutely can see Zach LaVine having a fantastic year next season. It's like, it's bizarre to me that people forget he's basically been a 50, 40, 90 guy almost. He's approaching that in the last couple of years at for long periods of time. So yeah, like, he's not worth the amount of money he's making. He's making a ton of money, but he's going to be either not with probably the Bulls. Like, to me, the smart thing to do with Zach LaVine, it would be, hey, you're coming back. You're going to rebuild your value and then we'll move you when we see fit, when we want to, but just smile and act like you want to be part of the team. That's the smart thing to do. They just give him away for nothing or bring in another horrible contract. I've been seeing like suggestions of taking on Wiggins. Why in the world would you do that? Wiggins is signed for 3 more years. He's far worse than Zach LaVine. Have you lost your mind? You think that's a good contract? Like, come on. No, just accept it that, hey, it's not a good period. He's at his low ebb for how much he's worth. If you can trade him for, like I suggested, getting Klay Thompson, you know, for 1 year and then, you know, 2 year option. So you can get, you know, cut out a couple of years, make a deal like that. That's fine. But not like Wiggins. Forget it. I mean, come on. Let's get real here. What really bothers me too about Acme, like, you look at their best move is arguably the Caruso move. Like, all the Lakers had to do is match it. We don't have Caruso. You look at DeMar DeRozan, like, we overpaid. What other team was paying for him to come? All this nonsense I heard with so many fans about it. We changed our culture and nobody wanted to come here before. And all of a sudden all these guys want to come here now. It was such a bunch of crap that they just bought and sold and bit into. Give me a break. It's so stupid. These same people are the ones now, the loudest people criticizing this Acme and criticizing everything and advocating a boycott, which I want to get into next because I just find it irritating. That said, if DeMar walks this year, just looking back, even DeMar, which is to me their best move, we still owe a first round asset to San Antonio for him. In retrospect, was it worth it for 3 years and one playoff victory? What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, okay, maybe you had a lot of points in there. I want to go back to Zach for 1 second first, and then I'll hit the other things you said. To go back to Zach, I think the right way to look at Zach LaVine is he's a player worth about $25 to $30 million, and so he's making like say $20 million more than that. So about $20 million of his space is dead space, and I agree with you. There's a good, reasonable chance that he's at his low value and he can rebuild his value. But I also like to say, never try to catch a falling knife. Like, he also ended the season on a surgery. You know, who knows what he's going to look like when he comes back. You know, he's had a lot of knee problems in the past. Like, I don't think there's a guarantee he rebuilds his value, but like, it certainly wouldn't shock me. And I don't think it should shock anyone, right? Like, he didn't play that many games last year and he started off just atrocious. But if you actually look at his season stats, by the end of the year, his like percentages were pretty close, closely built back up near to where they were the previous few years. So I think Zach can be fine, and he did a great job, and people will just who didn't watch, and I understand why you didn't watch, believe me. When he came back from the injury the first time and he played for a few games in between getting shut down again, you know, he took a backseat to Coby White. You know, he didn't just try and ball hog and do all this other stuff. And it looked like he watched what made the team successful and he tried to fit himself back into that. So I think Zach's like a little bit overbeaten up, like you said. I agree with you on that. So I just wanted to get that out there and kind of just throw a couple of tangible things in there. I agree with you that Caruso and DeMar are the best moves. And, you know, people will also hang at me out to dry on Zach's extension. You know, the thing I'll say is like, it's not so much that all these moves were necessarily so bad. Like if you just had moved DeMar DeRozan after that first year, like, and I said, we should at that time, as you remember, like you probably would have got two firsts for him. And then you would have had this one magical year and two first round draft picks. And that would have worked out fine. If you move Zach the summer after he had that big extension, you were going to get multiple firsts for him. So it wasn't that you signed him to this big extension and you were screwed. It was that you waited too long with a group of guys that didn't mesh well together and obviously didn't mesh well together. And you should have seen coming that this wasn't going to end well. You know, and with Vooch, it was clear as day. This guy was just falling off a cliff fastly. And you just should have just not brought him back. And same with Caruso, like, you know, ultimately, if he just leaves, it was a fabulous watching Alex Caruso for 4 years. Like if we just keep his 4 years and don't keep him. But you know, it's like another move. You had chances to then get better value out of him. So they've not taken any of the escape hatches that came up like when they were there. Like they set themselves on this kind of like disastrous, stupid path of trying to trade your way into like this really good team with non-star players. And it was just a really bad theory. Like that theory doesn't work in the NBA. And when it was clear it wasn't going to work, but they had opportunities to be like, oh, wow, this isn't the thing. Let's pivot out of this. Let's move DeMar now. Let's get rid of Vooch now. Let's bring in assets for Caruso, who's outplayed his contract and now is suddenly way more valuable than what we paid for him. Like you could have done those things. And like I said, you could be sitting here with Coby White and Io DeSumo and Pat Williams and like six first round draft picks, you know, and you'd be bad and whatever, but like you didn't make the playoffs the last 2 years anyway. So you'd also then have like one or two other lottery picks on this team. And then you'd have like a bunch of extra picks to try and like make something work in the future. And I don't know, like that team is going to win a title either. It's so hard to win a title, but you would then be on the road to rebuilding into a sustainable, young, exciting, high quality team. You know, if you were able to hit on some of those draft picks. And now we're going to be in the same boat, just without the six draft picks and extra lottery guy. But otherwise, it's going to be the same. And so that's a tough situation. We're going to rebuild with six, you know, maybe six or seven fewer picks if you count the lottery pick. And, you know, but we'll have Dalen Terry instead. So that's just what it is.
Did want to take a side street here because I want to address this like growing movement for a boycott. I received about 5 emails at cretfred@gmail.com if you want to send me an email on this topic, kind of like promoting this need to boycott the Chicago Bulls, not spend any more money on tickets, jerseys, t-shirts, which, you know, would be kind of difficult for me, DT, since about 50% of my clothing is Bulls related. Listen, you can boycott whatever you want. I grew up on the South Side as a Cubs fan. All my family, they're diehard Sox fans, and Sox fans have generally kind of had this attitude for years that if they're not going to be good, I'm not going. Now, I would counter that they don't really show up even when they are good, but I've always kind of scoffed at this kind of line of thinking from my family, because I got news for you. If you don't support your team, if you only support the Bulls, the Bears, the Cubs, the Sox, or whatever, in these times, I don't think you're a good fan. Like this, I'm out until things turn around idea. To me, that's the exact definition of someone I can't stand. That's someone who's only there when things are going well, only there who's smiling and patting you on the back and supporting you when things are, you know, going in the right direction. Well, that's a very definition of a fair weather fan. Like the measure of a man is how he is when things are bad. I believe that's a measure of a fan too. Are you invested? Like, do you care? Do you pay attention when the team sucks? Like, the Chicago Bulls, like in 2010 and 11, that year alone brought me more enjoyment in that season alone than the Bears have brought me in the last 15 years. The Bulls have actually been to an Eastern Conference final in the interim since the last time the Bulls won a playoff game. Yet all I hear is excitement and celebration about the direction of the Bears, And they won 7 games last year. Like, hey, the Bears are hopefully going in the right direction. There should be some excitement. I'm fine with that. But if you step back and think critically, you know, look at what they've accomplished. They've accomplished nothing. It doesn't take skill or talent to have the worst team in the NFL, to pass on C.J. Stroud, to trade down for a first-round pick, that you're only able to get like a first overall pick because the Carolina Panthers were so incompetent. Now, I hope this works out from this point forward. I hope they make the right decisions, and I hope they create something that actually, you know, wins more games than they lose. But, like, you're nothing but paper champions so far. Yet, I'm kind of going on this tangent just to prove, like, every single Bears fan I know is invested. Like, everyone I talk to, they know the team. They know everything about them. And we've achieved nothing. Nothing at all. So I got to be honest, like, if there's one or two injuries on the O-line, you know, I can guarantee you we're not going to do anything this year again. But I don't hear any demands on give up your season tickets or stop buying jerseys. I didn't hear any of this for the past 15 years. Now, is the problem ownership? The problem has been ownership, you know, for a long time in Chicago. But I don't think that was the reason the Bulls sucked this year. I don't get this idea. What's the end game? To boycott the team for what? To what? So hopefully they'll sell and then hand it over to another rich guy? Like, all these guys are bad people. To me, the best owner in Chicago is Ricketts. He hasn't taken a dime of public money. He actually won a World Series with the Chicago Cubs. We've been competitive for the vast majority of his years here. That's about the best you can get. And is he perfect? Hell no. But, like, this idea that Reinsdorf's a problem and we need to stop going and stop caring. Dude, if you want to do that, that's fine. But don't freaking tell me I'm not a good fan or I'm dumb because I care about the Bulls and I want to go to games. Every time I go to a Bulls game, I didn't go this year because I'm trying to pay for Purdue, my daughter at Purdue, and the money's insane how much it costs for college. This was the first year I didn't go to a Bulls game in forever. But that said, I'm still invested. I still pay attention. I don't get this. I don't get this. And I will not tolerate, like, people just, like, ripping on fans who want to spend their money and go to the game because it's a good experience. It's a great place to go. If I went to the game and I felt like I didn't enjoy it, then I wouldn't advocate going. But I don't know. I just like your take on this whole movement, this whole idea. And more importantly, do you want to boycott the team?
No, it was a lot, Fred. I guess I will say I am in the camp of, like, fan how you want a fan. You know, for certain people, like, if your idea is, like, you're going to boycott the team and it's going to, like, then make change, I think you're just pissing in the wind. Like, I don't think that's going to do anything or help. If your idea is, like, you know what, I'm not interested in this product and I'm not going to pay attention again until there's something for me to be interested in, that's just, like, a programming choice. And I think that's fine. Like, I don't think you need to pay attention to a team if you're not interested in it. And people can be interested in different things. Like, for myself, I don't need this team to win a title to be interested in it. There are, like, a huge group of people who are like, if we're not competing for a title, I don't care. But I want to see a team that's growing and that I feel is getting better and is, like, fun to watch and interesting. And, you know, for me, if you won, like, 47, 48 games and you get to the first round of the playoffs and you can get to up, like, the 5 spot, and you have a competitive first round series and you can win every other year and maybe get to the second round, like, that's enough for me to be interested in the team. You know, like, so people have different thresholds, and I'm not going to say where someone's threshold should or shouldn't be, whether you're interested. So yeah, if your thought is boycott to try and get them to sell or change or whatever, like, yeah, go ahead, buddy. Like, it's not going to work and it doesn't, like, there's no logic behind that, but hey, do you, if you're just done with the team and say, like, look, they've rolled out the same thing 3 years in a row, and even though it was obvious it was bad, and I'm not going to watch it again until I see something I want to watch. Like, you know, I understand that. I'm not going to try and convince someone to watch something they don't like watching. You know, I enjoy basketball, and the Bulls are the local team. You know, I probably watch more non-Bulls now than I would if the Bulls were more interesting. Like, you know, like, I don't catch every Bulls game anymore. You know, and if they were genuinely exciting, I probably would try and watch almost all games. You know, and if I couldn't watch them live, I'd watch them on tape the next day. And, you know, with this team, it's like, yeah, it's hard to get up that same energy for them. So, you know, that's just where I'm at. But, you know, like, I think everyone just, they just choose what they want to do. Like, it's your life, your hours. Like, you put your hours where you find value out of it. And if you don't find value in watching this team, I'm not going to tell you you should. But you're not going to change anything. You're not going to change anything by boycotting. So I guess I'm not saying I'm anti-boycott. Everyone can do what they want to do. But like, if you think it's going to work, like, no, it's not. That's just not how it works.
Well, I am anti-boycott. Because a boycott is you're actively trying to get other fans to stop going to games, to stop caring about the Bulls until what? Until they fire Acme? And a lot of these same people who are advocating for this boycott were the most vociferous anti-GARPAX, anti-org, and then as soon as they brought in these guys, oh, these guys are the best. I mean, you could find, just follow their Twitter accounts and see all these idiotic statements about how great Patrick Williams is and how much better this is and how many guys are going to want to sign here now that we got rid of GARPAX. And now they've just completely just turned on these guys? You know, like, I guess my point is, I don't see the same standard for other teams in the city, specifically the Bears. No one talks about boycotting the Bears and stop going to games. All these years they've sucked. They've been a total embarrassment, and there's a ton of celebration about the direction they're headed in, rightly so, but they've done nothing. So don't tell me like the Bulls are so lost that there's no hope here. The fact that Coby White took massive strides, going to be a most improved player, I mean, I think there's enough here to care. Like, if you don't want to pay attention, again, I don't care. But to organize a movement to not care about the Bulls and to stop investing in your time and money to convince other people, but it also implies that if you are, you're a moron. If you are investing your money, you're part of the problem. I'm not about that, dude. I'm not about that at all because I think that's stupid. I think if you're going to be like that, you're part of the problem.
There is no problem.
Because you're not a real fan.
It's a corporation. Yeah. Who cares? I hate the term real fan. Who cares? You know who's not a real fan? I'm not a real fan. You know, like, whatever. Everyone roots for whatever they want. Like, I mean, like, or let me rephrase it this way.
If the Bulls somehow next year by miracles win 57 games.
Fandom is not a meritous thing. Being a real fan is not a meritous thing. It is not an objective good thing. Like, it just isn't. It's some people are big fans. They like fanatics. They're crazy about the team. Irrationally crazy about the team. Like you and probably me. Anyone who watches like 70, 80 games a year of anything is probably pretty fanatical. But it's not like, I don't care. I agree with you. It's like, it seems like such a waste of energy to be like, no, boycott this. I want you to stop watching this. Like, why do you care what I watch? Like, you know, why do you care how I spend my money? Like, yeah, maybe I don't want you to go out to the restaurant you just went to. I don't know. But people care about weird stuff. Like, I don't, like, whatever. That discussion doesn't interest me too much because I think anyone trying to boycott anything, like, over, like, non-human rights things or something, it's like, it's just dumb. Like, all right, you know, you don't like this thing, you know, more power to you. But, you know, get out of, you don't get to decide for everyone else. Like, I just think it's a waste of time. But, yeah, whatever. Maybe in that sense, I'm anti-boycott for pretty much everything.
Before I get another email about joining the boycott, I'm not into your game. I'm not for it. I don't believe in it. I don't believe in boycotting the Chicago Bulls. There's about 1,000 other organizations I would boycott before I boycott the Chicago Bulls. I know a lot of people work over there. They're fantastic people.
Yeah.
For the most part, I like the players on this team.
I do too.
And so you think you're hurting Reinsdorf, regardless of what you do with your boycott, he's going to be freaking fine. I don't know how he is personally. I don't really care. All I know is, like, that organization I do respect, and I respect a lot of the people who work for that organization and a lot of the players. So, no, I'm not going to participate in your boycott. Stop sending me emails on it.
Everyone I
know. I did want to.
Everyone I know around the Bulls, just to say this. I don't know if they'd be listening or not, but everyone I've interacted with in the Bulls organization is an A-class person.
Yes.
Just a tremendous person. Like, I've known a lot of their media relations people. I'm part of their like fan moderator outreach program where like, because I'm a moderator and real GM, they kind of hook you up with a couple events. You know, we got to go to one together once. You know, like, they're just great people and, you know, whatever. I wish the organization nothing but the best, even beyond my fandom. Like, I think it's great people. I get why people are, whatever. People get emotionally upset. Like, all of this is like out of this weird emotional upsetness and also not really understanding the root causes of things too. You know, like, and the solutions to them. So it just is what it is. But yeah, I'm with you. No boycotts.
Do you think the owner is, I mean, I want you to go back because there's been a lot, even our mutual friend Mark Kay from Australia goes on and on about Reinsdorf, and who likes Reinsdorf? I mean, very few people do. But, you know, I just continue to have to point out, we did win six titles with him as the owner. You know, obviously he's not very competent. He's not very smart. I don't think he's a great owner, but it is possible to win without him. Like the mistakes in this, or it's kind of like, I think a lot of the people that were really behind Acme have kind of shifted to all of a sudden, it's not because of, they invested so much in this group, this front office group. It's suddenly shifted to, oh, it's the owner that's the problem, you know? And to me, it's like, now the owner, how do you put it? You always say this, the owner isn't today's problem. What could you kind of expound on that a little bit?
Yeah. The ownership might be a problem, but it's not today's problem. Like not paying the luxury tax might be a problem, but that's a problem when you're in the Eastern Conference Finals and you're a player away, you know, or you're in the second round and you're a player away. That's not a problem when you're 39 wins and you're in the ninth spot and you have a negative net rating. And, you know, like the most extra salary we could have paid this year is $7 million. We are not a $7 million player away from anything. We'd still be at home with a different $7 million player on this roster. Even if you went back and said, I can use the power of hindsight to sign anyone who made $7 million or less to this team and add anyone you want. There's no one who signed for that amount of money that was available that we could have signed, assuming they would come here at the same money, even assuming that, which all of that is like very dicey to assume. But even with that perfect predictive powers, we still would be in the same spot we are now. And so it's not today's problem. Today's problem is our general manager hasn't made a trade in 3 years. We've let our assets age. We've not traded any of them at their peak. We've kept doubling down on a strategy that was obviously poor. We're ignoring the modern metrics of the league. We can't protect the rim. We can't shoot threes. We've gotten old. You know, we overpaid for all our assets. We let all of our high-risk, long-term assets go for, like, nothing and replaced them with short-term assets. And, like, all of those things, that's today's problem. And, you know, that's what we're seeing now.
It's a problem. Like in 2012, when you let Kyle Korver walk for nothing,
yes,
because you don't want to go into the luxury tax in the year when Derrick Rose is in the hospital rehabbing from an ACL, so you don't want to go into the luxury tax that year, and you try to go on a poor man's version with Marco Bellinelli, and you let, despite your general manager and your president and your basketball people wanting to keep Kyle Korver, they have to let him walk because the team doesn't want to pay the luxury tax. That's when it's a problem.
Agreed.
It's not a problem today. Not a problem today. So your problem today is you traded two first-round picks in Wendell Carter Jr. for a guy who sucks on a defensive end who can't guard anyone, can't protect the rim, and suddenly lost his ability to shoot the three at an acceptable rate.
That's the original sin, I like to say, of Arturis Karnišovas. That's the original sin. You know, but then, like I said, they lucked or skilled or however you want to put it. They made enough moves where they had room to pivot. But instead of going like, wow, we can pivot now and we should, they're like, nah, we're going to double down. And that's the second thing.
Even greater sin.
You know, like, and doubling down on Vooch, not moving DeMar or Caruso when they have more value, not moving Zach when he had more value. Like, those are all other opportunities that were out there and would have all given you a better foothold to try and do something now. And so, you know, the way I like to look at these things is if you keep a guy, you get his present on-court value. Like, that's the value he brings to you. And that's real value, right? Like, I think it's fair to say we both loved watching DeMar DeRozan. Is that a fair statement?
I love DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, we love DeMar DeRozan.
One of my favorite Bulls ever.
He's tremendous. Yes, seems like a great guy, dude. I love every time I hear him talk. Like, he's super clutch. You know, won us a bunch of games. Like, we enjoyed watching DeMar DeRozan. So by not trading him, that's what we got. Now, knowing that we weren't going to make the playoffs for 2 years, if you knew that, would you have given up all those DeMar DeRozan games to have, like, two first-round draft picks? Like, I would. I mean, I enjoyed watching DeMar, but like, I would rather have had the two first round draft picks knowing I wasn't going to ultimately even make it to the playoffs. And, you know, that's kind of the same thing with like Alex Caruso. Like, all right, I love watching Alex Caruso. I love Alex Caruso, right? But you know the ultimate way this team is built. Like, these aren't going anywhere. And then by the time you can maybe like reshuffle the deck enough to get somewhere, these guys will not have any value to you anymore. And so, like, yeah, they kept us afloat. Like, those guys, like, those two guys, I think, are most responsible for keeping this team afloat and being in the ninth spot rather than being a lottery team. And it's just really, it's like, was that value worth more than all the picks you could have gotten? And, you know, to me, the answer is like, obviously not. You know, if we had won like 48 games, and even if this wasn't going anywhere, but we had won 48 games and we got to the second round once and lost in the first round twice, like, I would probably say, yeah, that was worth it. Like, those seasons, even though they weren't elite, would have been worth it. But that's just, in the end, that's just not the reality of what happened.
DT, I got to bring the bus in. We got some family plans for this afternoon, but next show, let's do grades, final grades for the season on Acme and Billy and the team. But I got to say, man, it's always enjoyable to take this bus out. We've been doing it now for a number of years, so many years. And I always enjoy talking to you. And most importantly, I enjoy everyone who listens. Like, it was great to have all those guys over watching that Atlanta Bulls game. I mean, that's what makes this special, right? Is the relationships we build on this podcast, but, you know, to the people who listen. So thank you to everybody who listened to the show throughout the season. I do believe there is a pathway to greatness here with Kobe and Io under contract at such a reasonable number. We just got to start getting aggressive and stop burying bigger holes and doubling down on mistakes.
All right. I'm going to try to get to your optimism, but I don't share it now. But I do agree with everything you said about the fan base. I don't share your optimism now, but I agree with everything you said about the fan base. The enjoyment we had watching the game. Like, all those things are awesome. Till next time.
All right, buddy.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls, man. Go Bulls. Go talk Bulls. To you later, my man.
Yeah, talk to you.
Take it easy, T.